The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show you've all been waiting for. Until now. Until literally right now.
Now!
Literally right now. Literally. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks. Thank you very much. Thank you. I say that now. Literally now. I'm sitting here in the studio with another friend from the King's College, Dr. Anthony B. Bradley, professor of religious studies at King's here in New York City. He also is a research fellow at the Acton Institute, and he has a book out titled Ending Overcriminalization and Mass Incarceration, Hope from Civil Society, published by Cambridge University Press. Anthony Bradley, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
This is a hugely important subject, and one of the reasons I'm excited to talk to you about it is because it's been something that's been on my heart for years, and we need what I call a biblical perspective. Sometimes in this country, we tend to see things only along political lines, and there are certain things that are a little complicated, and most things are complicated, but this issue has been complicated, at least in my lifetime, and we've treated it like a simple political issue. You know, the Republicans in the era of Nixon are like, lock them up and throw away the key. And then the bleeding heart liberals, you know, they're pro-criminal. They want criminals out on the street. You hear those two, you know, lies, basically. And then you think, well, what's in the middle? I have argued that there's a middle where Christian believers, people who take the Bible seriously, who are looking for a view of justice based on that, that we have a view, but it's not often articulated. You are doing a job of articulating it. So tell us, first of all, how did you get into the subject, much less write the book?
Yeah, great question. I was taking a class at Fordham University for a grad program that I was in, and I was studying at that time the relationship between trauma and juvenile delinquency. And in the course, I noted that most of the kids that end up in juvenile detention are either one of two things: A, fatherless, or B, they've experienced some sort of trauma. They were abused, physically abused. They saw their mom get beat up. And when boys in particular experience trauma when they're little, when they become teenagers, they act out. And so I begin to notice that we're locking up kids who aren't necessarily just bad kids, they're hurt kids. And that was my introduction to really digging into the topic.
Well, so this is like some people say, oh, that's the bleeding heart liberal view. In other words, oh, it's not their fault. They've got problems or whatever. And now as a Christian, I say, yeah, it's sort of both, right? In other words, you can do something. You can be wounded, and then you can go out and act in a negative way and hurt other people, and you kind of create this, or you contribute to the cycle. But I'm guessing a part of where you're coming from is you're saying, first of all, these are human beings, and we have to think about that. Talk about that.
Absolutely. So the emphasis in the book is that we need to think about both survivors and victims and perpetrators as human beings. And because they're made in the image and likeness of God, how then do we treat people that have been abused, those who've been victimized, but also how do we treat people who have been perpetrators of violence in particular over the long run? And our policies and our perspective need to keep the human person at the center rather than ideology, because policy alone will never, ever solve this problem.
Well, how can we do that? I mean, I think when I think of the justice system, the penal system, I'm generally horrified because I don't see what you just said happening. I don't even see this in the armed forces. I think that you're supposed to have, I would say, a biblical view of justice, a biblical view of everything. You treat people in a certain way. And if you don't, you really make things worse. If you allow soldiers to, you know, pillage and rape, and so as has happened in the past, it's no different when you allow gangs to rule a prison, or when you allow prison guards to abuse prisoners. How do we bring a biblical view of justice into the prison system?
Right. Again, great question. So about 95% of those who are incarcerated at some point are going to be released. Right. And I think it's a fallacy for us to think that the government, through their criminal justice machine, that industrial complex, can change the human heart and soul in such a way that when men and women are released from prison, they're better human beings.
Right.
Right. That's just not happening. This idea that it's a correctional facility and that rehabilitation happens in prison is false.
Although that's an old idea. I mean, that goes back to the 60s and the 70s. That was the big idea, that we are going to rehabilitate them. And you're saying that has failed.
It has failed. It doesn't work. You cannot do that. And in fact, people are actually criminalized and made worse off when they go to prison because of the process itself. And so we need to radically think about the types of interventions and policies that call for more types of institutions. I'm making a case for institutions like the church to come in and serve as the sort of a partner in the criminal justice systems program in order to humanize people, that they actually would be living and making virtuous choices rather than those that undermine human flourishing.
Well, I know very little bit about this, but what I know comes through Chuck Colson and Prison Fellowship and Angel Tree. And anytime I hear about Christians getting involved in that way, I get happy, because I feel like, wow, that seems like a step in the right direction. People who actually care about the prisoners and who have no incentive to care. They just care because they say, this is what God wants me to do. Scripture tells us to visit the prisoners. So what are some practical ways? I mean, you've written a book about it, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
So what are you saying that we might do?
Well, there are sort of three entry points. One is working to help keep people out of the system, period. Secondly, is sort of working with those who are in the system. And then thirdly, working with people once they get out. Now, there's all sorts of great interventions that need to, I would say, be celebrated in the church to keep people out of prison. For example, it is commonly known, particularly for boys who act out in terms of aggression, that they simply need affection and care and people who want to champion their existence. They need surrogate fathers. They need people to care for them, things like that. And I'm wondering what sorts of institutions, churches, sports, things like that, can come alongside people who feel dejected, who don't have any vision for their future, and are in the process of acting out to sort of redirect some of their attention. There are great programs like Prison Fellowship. There are all sorts of other great programs that work in the system to give prisoners education, give them job training, things like that. Mm. But also on the back end, when they get out, and this is where the church can do something really amazing, there's about, you know, there are over 300-some thousand churches in this country. If every church just adopted and cared for two former inmates, we're talking about over 1 million people right there. And what do they need? They need a place to live. They need connections to get a job. And they need people to help sort of help keep them accountable and provide them opportunities to make good decisions.
That's a stunning thing, because some churches are very small. Some churches are huge, and they could take in many, many more than that. Now, I know there are things like this happening on small scales around the country, but are you talking about sort of a national initiative on this subject? I mean, it seems like we need leadership in the church, somebody to kind of step up and to say, here's what we're doing. Are you in?
Yeah, I would say a national initiative is probably not the best approach.
Yeah.
Criminal justice reform and these issues are local. So we don't have a criminal justice system. We have 50 criminal justice systems, and if you break that down by county, we basically have 3,000 different systems.
Right.
The best approaches are always local.
Right.
We need local.
You sound like a conservative.
Sorry. Local
it's
approaches.
True.
It is true.
It happens
and
to
listen,
be true.
It's true because it's been historically proven to work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
when we decentralize and empower local people to care for their own communities,
right,
it actually reduces all these rates.
Mm-hmm.
We need local pastors and local communities caring just about their county. Listen, about 90% of all prisoners are in state prisons, not federal prisons.
90%?
About 90%. So this is a state issue. This is not a federal issue. This is a state issue.
Yeah.
So it's not that we need national initiative. We need state initiatives. We
okay.
need county initiatives. We need city initiatives.
Let's leave it right there. We're going to be right back. Folks, I'm talking to Anthony Bradley with the King's College, the new book, Ending Overcriminalization and Mass Incarceration, Hope from Civil Society. Stick around.
Heavenly bound, coming for to carry me home. Swing low,
sweet home,
sweet chariot, coming for.
It's Better Together, the exciting daily half-hour talk show by women and for women. It's good friends like Lori Crouch, Christine Kane, Carrie Jobe, Victoria Osteen, Lisa Harper, and many more. It's more than just a TV show. It's your daily destination for love, friendship, encouragement, and community. It's Better Together, 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 Pacific, only on TBN. Text TOGETHER to 316-316 to join in. That's TOGETHER to 316-316. We'll see you real soon.
Free offer contingent on subscription. Pay shipping and handling. Cancel anytime. Message and data rates may apply.
When did it become okay for men to be lazier, softer, fatter? We need to bring the men of this country back to greatness. And it's easier than ever with Ageless Male Max, a patent-pending formula with an ingredient that helps boost your total testosterone, promoting greater increases in muscle size and twice the reduction of body fat percentage than exercise alone. Plus, an amazing 64% increase in nitric oxide, which can be handy in the gym. Take your manhood to the max by trying your first 30-day bottle free when you text the word MASS to 797979. Finally, a formula that boosts total testosterone. If your results with Ageless Male Max are too intense, please decrease use. For your free bottle, text MASS to 797979. Text MASS to 797979.
Unplanned, based on a life-changing true story.
My name is Abby Johnson. I used to be the director of this clinic.
The Daily Wire says Planned Parenthood is not going to like it.
America wants abortion, which is why we exist.
Glenn Beck says you have never seen anything like this.
You've managed to make an enemy of one of the most powerful organizations on the planet.
Unplanned. Now playing. Visit unplanned.com for tickets. Rated R.
Rated R due to graphic scenes not suitable for children.
Hey there, folks. It's Eric Metaxas here. You all know how much I love MyPillow, and now Mike Lindell has come out with the world's most comfortable bed sheets. He finally found the best cotton in the world in a region where the Sahara Desert, the Nile River, and the Mediterranean Sea all come together to create the ideal weather conditions for growing cotton. This is not a joke. His new Giza Dream bed sheets are made with this long staple cotton, and he guarantees they'll be the most comfortable sheets you'll ever own. The first night you sleep on these sheets, you will never want to sleep on anything else. The Giza Dream sheets are available in a variety of colors, and like all of Mike's products, they come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Right now, you can get your very own by calling 800-978-3057, 800-978-3057, and use promo code ERIC or METAXAS to get 30% off plus free shipping, or go to MyPillow.com, but be sure to use the code ERIC or METAXAS, MyPillow.com.
Are you overwhelmed, unable to think clearly or sleep well at night? Are just trudging through each day, but not really enjoying your life? I'm a counselor with Faithful Counseling, and that feeling of distress can sometimes be because you're wrestling with a problem that seems too big or too impossible to overcome. Other times, people are consumed by a past hurt. I'm part of a network of Christian counselors, fellow believers, trusted therapists who share your faith. We want to give you a free week so you can try us out. You can begin a conversation with one of us by text or phone, even video conferencing today. Are you ready to shake this off and begin enjoying your life? If it's not for you, cancel during your first week and you'll not pay a dime. Go to TryFaithfulCounseling.com. It's time to talk to someone who can help. Go now to TryFaithfulCounseling.com. It's so easy to get started and your first week is free. Go now to TryFaithfulCounseling.com.
Anthony Bradley, professor of religious studies at the King's College, right here in New York City. We're talking about your new book, published by Cambridge University Press, Ending Overcriminalization and Mass Incarceration, Hope from Civil Society. Now, I have to ask you an obvious question, because I think other people are asking it. You're black.
Yes.
The people on the cover of the book are black. When we talk about criminal justice reform in America and mass incarceration and all that kind of stuff, you hear it over and over, and I believe because it's true, that for a number of reasons, African Americans end up behind bars for similar crimes to whites, except in more numbers. There's something happening in the culture. How do you see that? In other words, what does that come into it for you, or doesn't it?
That's a fantastic question. Thanks for asking it. So if you look at this historically, you'll see that this has more to do about poverty than race. For example, there are certain neighborhoods in cities like Chicago and New York that have been high crime neighborhoods for decades,
right,
prior to even the 1960s. So what we've seen since the 70s is that there's been a disproportionate interest in sending people to jail from poor urban areas, and it just so happens that African Americans have been living there right now. But before World War II, you know who it was? It was Greeks, it was Germans, it was Italians, it was Scotch-Irish. They were sent into jail as well. It's just so that by the time we got to the mid to late 1960s, they'd all moved away. And because of the Great Migration, African Americans were occupying those neighborhoods. And so what we saw in the that spike that happened in the 1970s was this sort of urban emphasis on crime.
Mm.
And that's changing, right? So really quickly, there have been, in the last about 10 years, a 425% increase in the incarceration rate of rural white people. That's the new spike. Why? Because they're poor. And in this country, we lock up poor people. We don't care what race they are.
Now, when you say we lock up poor people, we don't lock them up for being poor. But what you're saying is it is a fact that, in other words, we don't want to take moral agency out of it entirely. But you're saying, nonetheless, if you care about human beings, you realize that when people are in certain conditions, the odds go up that they're going to make bad decisions, which will get them incarcerated.
Well, what happens is that we make assumptions about people,
yes,
because they are from certain classes, whether they are sort of the ghetto class,
right,
or the white trailer trash class, right? We make assumptions about them, and then we're much more interested in sending the police in to control them. So we've had a history in this country since the mid-18th century of using police to control the poor. And it just so happened in urban areas in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there was a lot of attention paid to controlling those. Now, interesting fact, there were black leaders in D.C. in the 70s and 80s who were middle class, who were just as punitive as everybody else who was middle class as well.
Interesting.
Right? So yeah. you had all black mayors and judges and DAs. They were just as punitive, asking for mandatory minimums, asking for police protection. The difference is they also wanted more programming for social issues, for mental health programs, things like that. But this idea that it's sort of simply a race-driven issue,
yeah,
has really been disproven.
So I guess, you know, the main question I want to ask, I've already asked, but is what can we do because I think most people, it doesn't matter where you're coming from, whether you're a person of faith or not, you know that very little good is coming out of this. This is really making things worse. Obviously, to have so many people behind bars cannot be helping those people. It can't be helping society very much. It's expensive. What are some of the options, and who is behind some of that? Who is looking at this, you know, legislators and so on?
Great question. This is really fascinating. Most people may not realize this. It's the states led by Republicans that are making the fastest gains and reducing some of these numbers. So if you look at the states that have Republican governors, you'll find that those are the states that tend to lead on this.
On the good side of this?
On the good side. Their prison numbers, in terms of population numbers, are on the decline.
So what are some states that we can mention?
You can look at Indiana. You can look at Georgia. Georgia is probably one of the better ones to look at in terms of the types of things that they've done. States have essentially reduced the punitive nature of getting out of prison, right? So, for example, they have released employers from asking about your criminal record. For example, they've opened up parole and probation, things like that. This is sort of keep that stream from going in.
Right.
But the main driver of incarceration is the role of the prosecutor. And so more states are beginning to explore different avenues of keeping prosecutors. I don't want to say in check, but prosecutors are basically the only unaccountable actor in the system.
Okay.
Judges can't really do much.
I've gotten to know a little bit about this, and what I have learned disgusts me so deeply. I apologize if smoke comes out of my ears at any point, because I get very angry when I think that we have entrusted prosecutors with something. It's really sacred. You're dealing with human beings, and they seem to want to make a deal. And the issue of justice goes out the window. In other words, there's a level of cynicism that these prosecutors, I think, have been deputized to be cynical and to say, look, we're going to get what we can get. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Will you cop a plea? Will you say this? And if you don't, you may do more time. And so here's the safe thing to do and whatever. There's something, well, let me just say it, un-American about this. How have we gotten to this point? Has this existed for a long time, or is this the result of something in recent decades?
That's a great question. So there has been a decline of sort of criminal law in terms of how the system has been working. We've empowered prosecutors to have this wide level of discretion. About 95% of cases completely plead out, and prosecutors basically make the decision about who goes to jail and who doesn't. So this is what I tell my students: highlight the incentives and then follow the money. Highlight the incentives. Follow the money.
Okay.
Okay. What incentives might be driving a prosecutor to be overly punitive, and then look at what sort of financial incentives might inform that. So prosecutors want to advance their careers. They want to be DAs. Want to be governor someday. So it doesn't make a prosecutor look good if he or she is lenient in terms of being a prosecutor. And there's all sorts of financial incentives in terms of grants and things like that prosecutors get. When their office actually scores high levels of convictions.
Okay, you say convictions, but it's a weird thing. If you're getting somebody, you're putting somebody behind bars, but if it had gone to trial, maybe they would have gotten out. So the prosecutor, it strikes me, it's kind of like a lot of agents that people have. Like, you have an agent, they're supposed to be working for you, and then he realizes, well, it's a little complicated. They're also working for themselves, and they may not always do the thing that's in your best interest. They are going to do the thing that's in their best long-term interest. So it really is worrisome when you have prosecutors who they are thinking mainly about their careers, right? In other words, this is a classic case where if you take virtue out, the whole thing falls apart. I mean, that's why we need virtue in all parts of our of the systems in our government. But I have seen this happen a number of times. I don't know if you followed the Mueller case, but that I just to watch the way the system operates, whatever you think of the whole thing, the idea that you're kind of grabbing lower level people and squeezing them and doing things, and you think, whoa, it just feels wrong. It just doesn't feel American to me. It feels dirty, basically. But this is normal. I mean, this is happening at the highest levels with the Mueller investigation and at the very lowest levels for drugs on the street. It's happening everywhere. And we've accepted it.
Yeah, this is not federalism, right, at all.
Right.
This is concentrated power. And unfortunately, in the criminal justice system, instead of it being sort of decentralized, accountable power, it's been centralized to the office of the prosecutor. The state legislatures handcuff the judges, so judges don't really have that level of discretion anymore. Police officers are also handcuffed. But the one person who's basically in many states is sort of free to do whatever he or she wants is a prosecutor.
Now, how has that happened that you said judges are handcuffed and cops are handcuffed? How has that happened and that prosecutors have gotten more power? I don't get that.
Yeah. So what happens is that the state legislature defines what the laws are and what the penalties will be.
Right.
For example, mandatory minimums, for example, is a great model of how judges have lost their discretion.
Okay.
So in a state like Louisiana, it doesn't matter what the offense is. The third offense, you get the maximum penalty.
Okay, and is this the kind of a thing, it's like one of these law and order things, like you're tough on crime, so we're going to elect you. Is that it?
Absolutely, okay. For judges and prosecutors.
We're going to be right back, folks, talking to Anthony Bradley of the King's College. We're talking about his book, Ending Overcriminalization and Mass Incarceration. We'll be right back.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Six people have died in a small plane crash in central Texas. The FAA says the twin-engine plane crashed just as it was preparing to land at an airport in Kerrville. That's about 70 miles northwest of San Antonio. The Supreme Court will hear an important workplace discrimination case. The court will hear arguments on whether the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that prohibits employment-related sex discrimination also includes sexual orientation. The Trump administration says five nations will no longer be exempt from U.S. sanctions on importing oil from Iran. Those nations are China, India, Japan, South Korea, and Turkey. President Trump says Herman Cain has withdrawn from consideration for a seat on the Federal Reserve's board amid a focus on past scandals. And sales of existing homes fell 4.9% in March. That's after a huge gain the previous month. This is SRN News.
It's Better Together, the exciting daily half-hour talk show by women and for women in all seasons of life. Each day, host Lori Crouch welcomes popular women in ministry, music, entertainment, and more. It's good friends like Christine Kane, Carrie Jobe, Victoria Osteen, Lisa Harper, Dee Dee Freeman, Holly Wagner, and many more. So grab a cup of coffee, settle back in your favorite easy chair, and join Lori and friends as they sit down for fun, faith, and some powerful conversations about relevant issues all women talk about. Relationships, addiction, identity, no topic is off limits. Better Together is real friends getting together for real conversations. It's more than just a TV show. It's your daily destination for love, friendship, encouragement, and community. It's Better Together. Weekdays, 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 Pacific. Only on TBN. Text TOGETHER to 316-316 to join in. That's TOGETHER to 316-316. And we'll see you real soon.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I had a lot of credit card debt, and I couldn't pay my bills. I was feeling so bad. I got to a point where I needed some help. So I reached out and contacted Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976 to talk to a certified counselor.
They were able to take all of my different payments and put them all together.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts to one easy-to-manage monthly payment. Put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges. Reduce your interest and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
And they were actually able to work with my creditors. I've been able to pay off close to $15,000 in the last 18 months.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-990-6976.
Hey folks, it's here from Texas. Texas Show. I'm talking to Anthony Bradley of the King's College. Dr. Bradley, you've got a book out called Ending Overcriminalization and Mass Incarceration. We're now digging down into how this happens. And you said that the prosecutors have been effectively deputized by state legislators in part because the state legislators have handcuffed judges with things like mandatory sentencing, right? Are we finally beginning to see the downside of that? In other words, we've had that for a number of years. Are people pushing back against mandatory sentencing?
They are. And so some states are beginning to repeal some of those. So what's happened in the last 10, 15 years, the crime has been going down everywhere, but the incarceration numbers have been going up. And it has a lot to do with these sorts of policies where judges just don't have a source of discretion where they can say, you know what, maybe you don't deserve the 20 years, maybe you need seven. And then parole and some sort of rehabilitation programs, education program, or maybe some diversion program to a church or something like that.
Well, how do you even get mandatory sentencing? It strikes me as at least almost unconstitutional.
Well, the way it develops, again, this is a state. These are state issues. These are local issues. And so state legislators basically, like we mentioned earlier, to be tough on crime, say, hey, We're gonna lay down the gauntlet.
But are they saying that the judges are soft? Is that the issue? They don't trust the judges?
It's not that they. In many cases, they see themselves as sort of empowering judges to make decisions that they believe ought to be made. And remember, constituents are asking for people to do something. Right? What happens is there's a crisis. There's a problem. And regular voters are like, hey, we need to do something.
Right.
And the state rep says, you know what? We're going to be tough on these people. We're going to get them out of your neighborhood and make your neighborhood safe. So
yeah.
We're going to basically use prison as a deterrent by having these massive penalties
right.
put before them.
But
it doesn't sound
like it's working.
It's never worked.
Okay.
It's never worked.
So who's talking about this besides Anthony Bradley?
Oh, there are lots of people talking about it, of course. But here's the problem. Most people aren't talking about it in their state. So the one thing that I would encourage listeners to pay attention to is what's happening in your state. So the Trump administration just released some major initiatives at the federal level, which are great. But what's happening in your particular state is what you have to pay attention to, not what's happening in D.C., and that's where I'd say all of the major reforms need to happen, and that's where we're going to get real progress in the future.
Now, the Trump thing that happened recently, this is one of these glorious moments of bipartisanship to have Van Jones and Jared Kushner and, you know, Daryl Strawberry and all kinds of people in the room saying this is a good thing for America. That's huge. And I know that people are always looking for that, something we can all agree on. But is that only with regard to federal prisons? Is that what that was?
Yeah, because that's all they have jurisdiction for. So states have complete autonomy, as they should.
So this did not affect the 90% who are in state prison. See, I didn't know that. I just learned something. I like learning things on the Eric Metaxas Show because I'm thinking maybe somebody listening just learned the same thing. I had no idea. You know, you get all these headlines, it's good news, but you're telling me that's just for federal prisons.
Absolutely.
So are we seeing movements as a result of this victory by the Trump administration? Are we seeing movements in states to say, hey, let's see if we can have a win-win here too?
Yeah, the good news about what happened is that it sends a signal to states that maybe this is something that you ought to replicate as well. And so we're beginning to see, it's too early to tell because these processes and law changes take quite some time. But states are beginning to say, hey, we've got to do something. Our prisons are overcrowded. Our neighborhoods aren't any safer. This isn't getting any better. We need to be more creative than simply locking people up. And we need to take into account, again, that they're persons and victims are persons. Now, what's interesting is that a lot of people may not be aware that this is actually, Eric, a discussion about violent crime, more so than anything else. What are we going to do with the most violent folks? And if you ask survivors of violence what they prefer, almost 60%, about 59% of survivors don't want their perpetrator sent to prison. They want them to have some other alternative program because they know they're going to be re-released.
Aha. In other words, what you're saying is that they don't just want them away for a season. They want them to change.
They want them changed. They want them to be renewed. They want them to be healed. They want them, to, in some cases, to be fixed in some repaired.
Well, that, but that's the, exactly the opposite of what I would have suspected. I would think that, you know, if my daughter was killed or raped or something horrible, the most instinctive thing would be to say, I don't want that person ever to see the light of day again. But you're saying somehow it's more complicated.
It's much more complicated. And when you talk to survivors of violence, they want different sorts of things, especially if they know, for example, that people will be re-released back into their neighborhood. So they don't want them to come back from prison worse off because they might see them again or their kids might see them again.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we forget, too, that because prison often does dehumanize people and it makes them angry and it doesn't give them options. I mean, every prison's different, but you hear about that and you think, if they're human beings, I need to care about them while they're in prison. I can't just assume that they're there. Who cares? That's their issue. I have to do something about that. I know that Prison Fellowship also had another arm called Justice Fellowship where they were involved in this. Have they been active in any of this? I don't know how active they've been lately.
I'm not exactly sure of the program, but yeah. There are lots of other programs that have been trying to humanize the system to make people better off than they were when they leave than when they came.
We'll be right back, folks, talking to Dr. Anthony Bradley of the King's College here in New York. The book is Ending Overcriminalization and Mass Incarceration, Hope from Civil Society. Hey, Albin.
Hey, Eric.
Can I tell you about Relief Factor?
Please.
No, actually, I mean, can I tell you about it?
Okay, you may.
I may?
You may.
But what I'm trying to say is I've got somebody even better. Yes, I've got a guy named Alan who's been using Relief Factor. I'd like to hear what he has to say about Relief Factor. Here it is.
I've been in back pain since my early 20s. Now I'm 51. In my early 20s, I worked for the state prison. I got injured and I was off work for about a year. I'm now a train engineer. I basically sit all day long. My wife making me take Relief Factor literally changed my life. I don't feel like I'm 20 again, but my back does.
Well, see, this is why I want, I could talk about it all day long, but I'm telling you, so many people have been blessed by it. You go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com. It's all botanicals. There's nothing dangerous about it. You can take it all day long, and you will know within 3 weeks if it works for you. And if it works for you, it will probably change your life. Relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com.
The backyard's looking great, Rob.
Thanks, man. I was planning on adding a deck, too. Know any good contractors?
Why don't you just ask HomeAdvisor?
Home what?
HomeAdvisor.com. You just tell them about your project and they match you with local pros that can do the job.
Nice. Now, how much does it cost?
Oh, HomeAdvisor's totally free to use. Plus, you can read customer reviews, check pricing, and book appointments for free.
What's the website again?
HomeAdvisor.com. Or just download the free HomeAdvisor app. HomeAdvisor.
What happened? You used to go hours without visiting the bathroom. Now it seems like you're constantly getting up to pee, and you're even getting up at night to go. This is not okay. Listen, the makers of Super Beta Prostate, the number one prostate formula, are introducing a new wonder pill, Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced, with three key ingredients that are great for your prostate. It's like taking three prostate supplements in one. To celebrate, we're sending free bottles to men who want to cut down on bathroom trips. Yes, your first 30-day supply is free. Pay shipping and handling.
Call 1-800-203-0439. P3 Advanced has clinically tested non-prescription ingredients to support your prostate.
Combine that with a reduction in urges to pee, and you have a formula you'd be crazy not to try. Get P3 Advanced free.
Call 1-800-203-0439. 1-800-203-0439. 1-800-203-0439.
Unplanned, based on a life-changing true story.
My name is Abby Johnson. I used to be the director of this clinic.
The Daily Wire says Planned Parenthood is not going to like it.
America wants abortion, which is why we exist.
Glenn Beck says you have never seen anything like this.
You've managed to make an enemy of one of the most powerful organizations on the planet.
Unplanned. Now playing. Visit unplanned.com for tickets. Rated R.
Rated R due to graphic scenes not suitable for children.
Do you want to get rid of your expensive landline, save money, but keep your important home telephone number? Then OurOldNumber.com has the perfect solution. OurOldNumber.com allows you to keep your home phone number and cancel that expensive landline connection. With OurOldNumber.com, calls from family and friends to your home phone number are answered by a personal greeting from you. The caller selects which family member they want to reach, and the call is immediately forwarded to that family member's cell phone. Your important home phone number is still your number. It's still in directory assistance, and no matter where you happen to be, you'll never miss a call. There's no equipment to buy. There's nothing to install. There are no long-term contracts, and it's only $9.99 per month. Best of all, OurOldNumber.com eliminates those annoying sales calls. Now, your home telephone number can be as mobile as you and your family are with OurOldNumber.com. Visit OurOldNumber.com to learn more and get started today. OurOldNumber.com.
College. And Dr. Bradley, you are here in New York City. I was just asking you what church you go to, and you named the famous Redeemer. People often say it's Tim Keller's church. Well, it was never Tim Keller's church, but we get the idea. But also now Tim Keller has left. He's kind of doing his own thing, and there are all of these Redeemer churches out there. Some of them are not predominantly Korean. I want people to know that. That's a joke. I had to leave because I'm non-Korean. No, but I guess the fact is that it's now a movement across the city. So when somebody says they go to Redeemer, I don't even know what that means anymore. There's like 100 churches around the city. But you are also involved in a church up in Harlem that relates to this issue. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so for the last few years, I've been at Greater John Hill Baptist Church on 127th Street and Frederick Douglass, right in the heart of Harlem, two blocks from the Apollo Theater. And over my time there, I've had opportunity to build some relationships with former offenders. And it's really fascinating, on the one hand, to talk about this as a policy issue, but secondly, when it's a human being in your face over lunch or dinner having a conversation about what he needs in order to flourish and thrive. And that's been really life-changing.
Well, it's just a wonderful thing. I think Bonhoeffer, when he was up in Union in 1930, he went to all the kind of mainline white Protestant churches, and he was totally, you know, disappointed or disgusted. And then his friend Frank Fisher, who is an African-American from Alabama, said, hey, why don't you come up to Abyssinian Baptist Church? And he goes up to, you know, to that church, and he sees something completely different. He sees a community that is alive to all of this stuff. They're not just doing church. They're living out, they're being the church. And so they're involved in all kinds of stuff. And obviously it's important to do that, but you're saying that the church that you're visiting up there, they are interested in this and they've been working with you.
Well, yeah, because the church is situated in a neighborhood where people end up in the system, right? And so what happens is that you find people who, because of real relationships and care and affection, they have interest in making sure that people thrive when they get out, and you begin to see what their real needs are, and you begin to see the levels of brokenness that predict people getting into the system, and the ways in which the church can really intervene and keep people out of the system.
Well, this is the key. The local church is the key. I mean, there's no doubt about it when I hear you talk about this. And I think part of the problem with Manhattan, you know, I'm teasing about Redeemer and stuff, but there's something very non-local about much of Manhattan, not Harlem, not the boroughs, but you know, you go to places, people come and go, they lived in Manhattan for a few years, then they go off here, they go there. You don't get that sense of locality or neighborhood in a way, but obviously in Harlem you do, and obviously around the rest of the country, mostly you do. People have a sense of community. And I don't know where I was just reading this the other day, but that people need to think about the church as the first solution, that this is the place where we have people on the same page theologically and say, we want to help these people. What can we do? So, I mean, if somebody's just listening right now, they go to some church in Texas or some church in Indiana or wherever they are listening, what is something they might do?
Great question. So there are a range of issues. The first is adopt orphans.
Wow, you mean actually
adopt
kids.
Orphans, adopt kids.
Yeah.
If you look at the predictors of juvenile delinquency and deviance, it's fatherlessness. It's just that simple.
Man,
if you think about who's in prison, it's primarily a community of men who didn't have good fathers.
Okay, now why we're living in culture, you know this. We're living in a culture where we don't talk about this. I mean, we had Moynihan talked about this 55 years ago. He wrote his report on, you know, the breakdown of the black family, whatever. And even then, people gave him pushback like, we don't want to get into that. And all these years later, you realize, unfortunately, it's true.
Well, you see it internationally. I do some work in Belfast. And if you look at the housing projects in Belfast, 80% of kids born outside of wedlock, guess what? Same issues, right? High crime, a lot of deviance, a lot of arrests. And the issue is fatherlessness, right? So it doesn't really matter if it's urban Chicago,
right,
or Belfast,
right,
or Tokyo, whenever you have the family being broken,
right,
down. So just simply adopting orphans alone would have a massive influence.
No, go ahead.
Yep.
No, I'm just saying we can just complain about this, or we can do what you just
sure,
said.
Sure.
We can adopt the orphans.
I've also encouraged 20 somethings in the city to instead of spending Sundays having brunch for Instagram purposes, to actually spend their Sundays mentoring some high school students and playing basketball,
ouch,
hanging out, something like that.
I just had to say,
right?
Ouch. Having brunch for Instagram purposes. Ow.
Yeah. I mean,
that is wow.
Listen,
these
are not hard solutions. People need time. People need other people to spend time with them and to care for them. It's really just that simple. That's how we implode this issue in this country.
Are there churches in New York City that have these kinds of programs set up? So rather than say like, oh, I'm going to spend time with an orphan, but there's a program in the church that might connect me with an orphan or with some young kids or something?
Sure. I mean, you can sort of go through the traditional adoption route. There's a great program in the Bronx called Community Connections for Youth, and it basically partners adults with young people to sort of help them either process through the system or keep them out, or when they get out, to kind of help them return back to community. So I would recommend that program as something to look at as a model of what can be done in a local neighborhood.
It's just a funny thing because, you know, people look at you funny if you don't recycle or if you litter or if you smoke. They look at you funny. There's this thing called cultural pressure. It's got very little to do with the law, you know. It's cultural pressure. And if it becomes part of what it means to live a full life, to have your hand someplace in this, to be doing something in this. You know, Wilberforce talked about wanting to make goodness fashionable. This is goodness. This changes things. It's very, very dramatic what we can do. If the church would wake up and understand that it's just not about, you know, going to Bible study or whatever,
yeah,
it is. Those things are important, but God forbid they keep us from helping human beings. We're going to be right back, final segment, with Anthony Bradley. The book is Ending Overcriminalization and Mass Incarceration, Hope from Civil Society. Civil society, that's us. We'll be right back.
Are you overwhelmed, unable to think clearly or sleep well at night, or just trudging through each day but not really enjoying your life? I'm a counselor with Faithful Counseling, and that feeling of distress can sometimes be because you're wrestling with a problem that seems too big or too impossible to overcome. Other times, people are consumed by a past hurt. I'm part of a network of Christian counselors, fellow believers, trusted therapists who share your faith. We want to give you a free week so you can try us out. You can begin a conversation with one of us by text or phone, even video conferencing today. Are you ready to shake this off and begin enjoying your life? If it's not for you, cancel during your first week and you'll not pay a dime. Go to tryfaithfulcounseling.com. It's time to talk to someone who can help. Go now to tryfaithfulcounseling.com. It's so easy to get started, and your first week is free. Go now to tryfaithfulcounseling.com.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. The Supreme Court will take on a major test of LGBT demands in cases that look at whether federal civil rights law bans job discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and so-called gender identity. Attorney John Bursch is with the Christian legal group Alliance Defending Freedom. He says only Congress can change Title VII.
Businesses always have the right to rely on what the law is, not what government agencies want it to be, when they create and enforce employment policies.
Title VII prohibits sex discrimination, but does not specifically mention sexual orientation or transgender status. A ruling likely by June of 2020. Sri Lanka's Minister of Tourism says 39 foreign tourists, including Americans, were killed in the Easter Sunday attacks on churches and hotels. The total number of those killed now close to 300. This is SRN News.
Following is a true story.
My name is David Bryant. When I was 37, my wife and I decided to get term life insurance through SelectQuote. Just 3 years later, I was diagnosed with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Because of life insurance, the people I love most in this world will be protected no matter what happens to me. I know that the dreams I have for my family can still come true. Financial security, to stay in the home we became a family in, and for our children to be able to go to college. I reached out to SelectQuote because I wanted to share my story. If just one person purchases life insurance, I know I will have made a difference.
SelectQuote can find a 37-year-old male a $500,000 policy for under a dollar a day.
If there are people you care about, you need life insurance. It may be the single most important financial decision of your life.
Don't put off protecting your family. Get your free quote now. Call 800-6 671-7070. That's 800-671-7070. 800-671-7070 or go to SelectQuote.com. This is a paid endorsement. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Not available in all states.
Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Dr. Anthony Bradley of the King's College. I ought to have mentioned earlier that he's appeared on C-SPAN, CNN, NPR, Fox News, yada, yada, yada. And here he is on the Eric Metaxas Show. And you do a lot of speaking on this. I mean, if a big church or something is interested in hearing more on this, I know that you travel.
Absolutely. So I've been speaking at lots of churches and colleges about this.
Yeah, because it is important to get people excited about the possibilities. I mean, if one big church adopts a handful of orphans or adopts a handful of inmates that just got out and says, we're here to help you, that is just so huge.
It would change the country. I'm not kidding. This whole issue would probably begin to decline precipitously over the long run if churches did just a few simple things of doing what Jesus said to do, like love their neighbor. Right. So we have to love even criminals. Jesus loves us. We're a bunch of criminals. So to sort of extend that grace to others is to me just a model of the gospel.
You know, when you realize that your average person is under condemnation, I always think specifically of my producer, Albin Sadar. If people knew the truth about that guy, but I can't say that on the air. But it's true. If you're, that's how you know the difference between real Christians and cultural Christians. If you know you're guilty, if you know that apart from the grace of God, you would be in jail, you would have made different decisions, I think it enables you to reach out to people with love. But I think there's some people that maybe they're afraid of getting dirty. Like they think, no, I'm clean. I don't do that crime stuff, and I don't want to get near that. And it's like, well, you're wrong. You're not understanding the gospel of Jesus, which is, you know, pretty key.
Well, it's the history of Christianity. I mean, the early church made its mark
right
by going after and rescuing infants that had been thrown out in the culture. They got their hands dirty, and the church exploded as a result of it. So we're just asking churches to love broken people, to hold people accountable. Churches can do simple things like rent an apartment and have two inmates live there to give them an address. And then use the church resources to give them soft skills so they can get jobs and keep jobs. It's just simple things like that.
So it even works as a church growth thing, right? It gets people excited. It's even better than like having a sermon series on Star Wars. Even better. Can you believe that, Anthony?
It's amazing.
It's kind of amazing. If you want to grow your church and get people excited about Jesus, I mean, we all know the best thing you probably could do is preach a sermon series on Star Wars. But even better, if people can believe it, would be to do some of the stuff you're talking about in this book. You said some states are really taking the lead. You said Georgia, Indiana. Any other states that are doing some good things with this?
Yeah, it's quite you know, it's getting quite better. So even Texas, Louisiana, I mean, those states that have high rates, any kind of tweak changes the whole system.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, California is a state that drives a lot of the national data, period. So if California alone had some adjustments, it would change all this data nationally. So I think listeners need to know that they can have a massive impact in their state by paying attention to what happens in their state legislature and asking their representatives to sort of free up other parts of society, like the church,
right,
like these groups,
right,
to actually help out with this problem.
I love it. We're out of time. Dr. Anthony Bradley, congratulations on the book published by Cambridge University Press. The book is titled Ending Overcriminalization and Mass Incarceration, Hope from Civil Society. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks for what you do at the King's College and elsewhere, and God bless you.
Thanks for having me.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.